You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Andrew Child, and welcome to 50 Key Stage Musicals, the podcast, a companion piece to the Routledge Press publication, 50 Key Stage Musicals, which is available for purchase by going to Routledge.com or clicking the link below in today's show description. Today's episode focuses on Chapter 38, the 1994 revival of Grease, and we're chatting today with Professor Robert W. Schneider. Professor Schneider holds academic appointments at Penn State University, New York Film Academy, and the University of Mount Union. He is the artistic director of the J2 Spotlight Musical Theater Company, original programming producer at Feinstein's 54 Below, as well as the host of the podcasts Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends, Gay Card Revoked, and This Was a Thing. He is also the co-author of 50 Key Stage Musicals. Rob, how are you doing today?
I'm wonderful, Andrew. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Amazing. Well, I'm excited to talk to you about the 94 revival of Grease, and I'd love to just get things started with what the heck is this revival doing in this book? What makes it key?
That I think is a question that a lot of people probably are asking when they
Where's the Sunday in the Park with George chapter? Is that what you meant to put here?
Well, I could have put Act One of Sunday in the Park with George in there and been happy. I shouldn't say that because people will get angry.
Okay.
No, you know, one of the things for the book was this idea that that the shows that we had definitely changed the industry in some way, shape, or form. And you cannot deny that the 1994 revival of Grease changed the way casting happened on Broadway, which has now had a massive domino effect. Some might say for the better, some might say for the worst, but either way, you're either getting what the model of the revival of Grease created was a casting model that so many producers saw for the first time that it was an easy way to make money off of a lot of tourists who might not have gone to the theater had they not had a quote unquote stunt casting act or a stunt actor in the particular role, which has led to the survival of such shows as Grease, which ran forever and ever. Chicago is now the longest running revival in American history. And it's specifically because of its casting. The fact that it consistently cycles in people that you probably would not think of as being in a musical, but would intrigue enough audiences to actually come out because they want to see the stunt performer perform. They're not coming to see Chicago per se. They're coming to see Jerry Springer in Chicago because they like Jerry Springer's television show. Now, the downside of that is somebody like Jerry Springer, who's not really a musical theater performer, is taking a role away from somebody who is a very qualified performer that could be going into that role. But on the flip side, you also then have people coming to see a Broadway musical that might not have seen a Broadway musical had it not been for that particular stunt casting. Mm-hmm. And they might go off and see another Broadway musical because they enjoyed Chicago. So it's really a double-edged sword, but that all started with Grease in 1994.
And so would you say, when we talk about Grease being a key revival, is this just changing Broadway marketing and sort of the business side of the theatrical endeavor? Or does this have an artistic effect as well?
Well, I will be honest with you. The 1994 revival of Grease was very enjoyable, but it did not break any artistic ground. So we don't look at it really from an art, not like some of the other shows in here, like A Company or Sweeney Todd, where artistically things were being changed. This was a very nice revival of Grease, but what it was changing, like you said, was the industry and how exactly people get to have leading roles on Broadway and exactly how do people get to be in a Broadway show. And so that's really what we're talking about when we're changing it, because the model that that Barry and Fran Weisler, who were the producers of the Grease revival, came up with is something that's still being used today. Sometimes it works brilliantly. Like, for example, some might say that Sarah Bareilles going into Waitress, even though she's the author of the piece, is stunt casting. And that's an example where it works really, really well. And then sometimes it backfires a little bit. You know, there's a long list of, you know, Real Housewives who have gone into different shows. And that makes the artistic quality of the show suffer because the person isn't qualified to necessarily be on stage. They got lucky with Sarah Bareilles because not only is she a brilliant writer, she also turned out to be a brilliant actress as well. You know, that's rare. That is rare. That's rare.
Well, and also we know she can sing, you know, and yeah, sometimes we see stunt casting, it's Jerry Springer. Can Jerry Springer sing?
Well, no, the answer to that one is no. So we talk about the 94 Grease because it really changed the model of the way the casting industry was looking at shows. And then what it's interesting because suddenly doors open to, I'm going to use the word performers very loosely because I'm going to, you know, before this, I don't think a stand-up comic, I don't think an Olympic gymnast, I don't think somebody who had been in a bunch of B movies would have ever been considered to be the leads in Broadway musicals. Mm-hmm. Now, suddenly all those doors open to all these other different people that are in other areas of the entertainment industry. But then it also closes doors on a lot of really qualified Broadway and theater actors who now can't get in because the role that they're right for is being taken by Linda Blair from The Exorcist, or it is being taken by Cousin Brucie, the DJ that also went in through Grease. Like I said before, it is a double-edged sword, but it, you know, the casting world is so revolutionized by this idea that it's brought people into the theater who would not have been there before, but it also then allowed people who were supposed to be in the theater, not giving them a seat at the table any longer because they were not a celebrity. I think we're still seeing this now today, and I think it's going to evolve over time. Nowadays, and you know, we act like it's not happening, but it is happening. Casting decisions are being made by how many TikTok followers somebody has, how many Instagram followers somebody has. And I don't think that's any different than what Grease was dealing with in the 90s. If that makes sense.
What this is also sort of hearkening back to for me is an earlier episode when we talk about My Fair Lady. And Peter Felicia kind of lays out for us the ways that Rex Harrison being in My Fair Lady, someone who is an actor who doesn't sing, who can't sing, opens up the floor to a whole slew of dramatic and comedic actors to come into different roles. Do you think is something similar going on here?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like I said, you know, it allowed all these people from different forms of the entertainment industry to say, oh my gosh, there is a possibility of me being in a Broadway show. Because before everything was pretty segregated. You could be in a Broadway show as a musical theater performer, and maybe you would do film, maybe you would do television. But if you were over in the film world, you rarely came into the world of musical theater.
Okay.
You know, if you were in television, you rarely came into the world of Broadway musical theater. More often than not, you might be doing like summer stock places or regional theater places. So, yeah, I think that much like what Peter is saying on My Fair Lady, I would say the same applies to this Grease. Now, stunt casting is a term that I think we should probably try to define. And that is, it's for us, you know, it's this idea of taking someone that I think is an unknown entity and putting them into a Broadway production because we don't know if it will work. We don't know if it won't work. And I think a great example of, I'm going to give you a flip side of an example of this. Sometimes people think of stunt casting as they'll put any celebrity into a show. And a couple of years before Grease, there was the musical Grand Hotel.
Okay.
And in Grand Hotel, there was the role of the ballerina, the aging ballerina, which I think was played by Lillianne Montevecchi originally. It was a Broadway actress. When she left the production, then people like Leslie Caron went through, Sid Charisse went through.
Wow.
Some people might say, well, that's stunt casting. It isn't. It isn't. The role calls for an older dancer. And both Leslie Caron and Sid Charisse, even though they had not done a lot of Broadway musicals, that's a stunt, but in some ways it still reinforces the idea of the concept of the show, which is it's an aging dancer. Okay, so that's one. Now, stunt casting for us, I would say, is putting somebody like Brooke Shields into Grease.
Okay.
She's much older than the character of Rizzo is supposed to be. We know Brooke Shields as this sweet, angelic teenager from movies from the 1970s and 1980s. Mm-hmm. So she's going to go in as Rizzo, which is a very hardened and tough character. Brooke Shields has not really sung. She's not danced. She's not been on a Broadway stage.
Right.
This is stunt casting.
Okay.
This is stunt casting. Okay. Mm. Because we're saying this is somebody who has sort of like a teenage following. We're putting them in a quote unquote teenage show. Mm. Is it going to work? Is it not going to work? Fortunately, it worked. That was a surprising one, where it turned out for her that she was this incredible actress. Mm. You know, she was this incredible musical theater actress. And after she did Grease, she went on and she did Wonderful Town a few years later on. She did the Leap of Faith musical. So that was one that proved, okay, stunt casting can somewhat work. Mm. Then we see, I don't want to talk badly out of school, but, you know, then you have some people like Joe Piscopo who come in as, you know, Vince Fontaine. And Joe Piscopo is a stand-up comic. He's not really a musical theater actor. I don't think he understands the artistic sense of what's supposed to happen. Mm. So that's stunt casting that goes in the opposite direction. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. Do you think that the stunt casting going on in Grease, I feel like Grease, because of the movie, it already sort of has a following. It already has an audience. Were they building upon that natural audience, or were they trying to sort of broaden that audience, go after different demographics with these stars?
I think they were trying to go after different demographics. And I think that's what the brilliance of the casting is, which is they said, look, there's a whole world of untapped individuals that should be coming to see Broadway shows. Mm-hmm. And how can we lure them in? Yeah, you've seen Grease. You've seen the movie of Grease. You probably saw a high school production of Grease mm-hmm. at some point in your life. What can we do to make Grease different? Well, what if it's the people that are populating the show? Mm. And because Grease is about nostalgia, at the end of the day, that's really what the show is about. It's about mm-hmm. looking back to a more quote unquote innocent time. The Barry and Fran Weiser were very smart because in the casting of Grease, they used people that were nostalgic. So for example, Sally Struthers, who was, a very big television star in the early 1970s, mm-hmm. was then cast as Miss Lynch, the principal. Mm. So then you go, oh, that makes me feel nostalgic. The fact that Cousin Brucey, a very popular New York disc jockey, came mm-hmm. on as Vince Fontaine, that made people feel nostalgic. So I think they were trying to expand their demographic. I think they were trying to expand their demographic. And then because other producers saw how successful it was, then other companies, like take for example, Disney, the people that rotated in through Beauty and the Beast, mm. some of them being stunt casting. Chicago, like we mentioned earlier, is built on stunt casting.
Right.
You know, I mean, after the first couple of years of Chicago, they ran out of quote unquote Broadway performers. Uh-huh. And then we're like, how do we keep Chicago interesting to people? Now it kind of works in Chicago, because Chicago at the basis of it is people being famous for not having talent.
Mm.
So in some ways it kind of works.
Oh, absolutely. This big commentary, this statement on fame, this statement absolutely. On mob mentality. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then so anyway, that's that. I don't know even if I answered the question.
Do you
I'm
think
sorry.
Does Grease naturally lend itself because of this theme of nostalgia? Because I'm also mm-hmm. just sort of starting to think about the ways that there's this nostalgia casting going on in the movie version of Grease. You have Frankie Avalon, you have Sid Caesar, you know,
yes.
you have who's the band? Don't they have like Shanana or someone at the?
Yeah, Eve Arden is the principal. Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. It is nostalgic. So what they're doing is not that different. Mm. The only thing I would say is that they didn't really put them in leads. You know, it's supporting characters in the movie, the gym teacher, the principal.
Right.
This is going further. This is saying, well, not only will they populate those roles, they'll also populate some of the leading roles as well. Rizzo was the big one. Was the big one where a cycle of individuals went through. It started with Rosie O'Donnell in the original company. And it kind of worked because Rosie O'Donnell, even though she wasn't a singer, and that is mm-hmm. that's stunt casting in itself, which is take the tough comic and have her play this role. Because Rosie O'Donnell doesn't have the greatest singing voice, it kind of made other people feel like, oh, I can go play this because if Rosie can do it, I can do it.
Which is not always true. I think Rosie O'Donnell is supremely talented.
Oh, please don't get me wrong. I agree with you. I think she's a marvelous actress. And I think her voice, while it's not like the greatest singing voice, it serves the character for what you need. But I think that's deceptive to people. I think because what she also had was charm about her such an enthusiasm for being on stage that I think that outweighed any sort of vocal limitations that she might have possibly had.
So we see, it sounds like, a lot of stunt casting going on in revivals, big time.
Yeah.
You've talked a lot, or you've mentioned a lot, Chicago. We're talking obviously about Grease. You also mentioned that Beauty and the Beast had a lot of stunt casting going on in its original run.
Yes.
Do you think there are shows that lend itself easier to stunt casting? Or do you think this could be applied
to...
I
do. Yeah, I do. I think shows that edge into the world of camp allow themselves to do that. I think shows that allow, like, for example, something like Hairspray, I think allows itself to have stunt casting, especially in the role of Edna. I think you could do stunt casting. I think all the mother figures in that you could do stunt casting with. The Drowsy Chaperone, I think, is another show where you can get away with, stunt casting.
Well, that's campy to the max. That's
right.
So elevated.
And it's interesting to note that when they first started working on Drowsy Chaperone, the Beth Level role of the Drowsy Chaperone, they were looking at people like Tina Louise. They were looking at people like Eartha Kitt. They were looking at people who had a camp nostalgic quality to them. And then eventually they realized that it was probably best to go with the Broadway actress, which at the end of the day, the Broadway actress ended up winning the Tony Award and, became the toast of Broadway for her performance. I think if it goes into camp and I think if it goes into nostalgia, you have an easier time because the audience is more forgiving of limitations.
Do you think, are there shows right now on Broadway that you think are rife for stunt casting or that you think in a few years are going to be resorting to this, falling back to?
That's a really fantastic question. I mean, Chicago is the perennial in that in that regard. It's still running. I think that, that's there. Waitress, which is no longer on Broadway, in addition, also produced by the Weislers, which is really interesting, also had stunt casting. For example, The Old Man in the Restaurant, they had Al Roker come through.
Wow.
And then they said, why does the doctor have to be male identifying? And they gave the role to the actress June Squibb. So, I think that if that show ever comes back, I think that would be one. I cannot think of one off the top of my head, though, that right now is works in that sort of world. Okay.
I guess like the big question for me are, these long running Broadway sort of placeholders that are there forever, permanent fixtures. Are we going to see in 10 years, are we going to see stunt cast Christine Daae? Are we going to see stunt cast Elphaba?
You know what? I think you might see it in Wicked. But I think it would be supporting characters. I don't think it would be lead characters.
They've a little bit done with the tours. They've put people in as the wizard. They've put people in as Metamorable.
Absolutely. I think, though, that the other thing is with shows like Wicked and shows like Phantom, they are so complex musically that I don't think you can sort of just throw in a Rosie O'Donnell type and hope for the best.
Okay.
In a lead role. I mean,
so you're telling me I'm never going to see Fran Drescher do Defying Gravity and you're crushing my dreams.
I'm so sorry about that. But I will be the first to pay for it if she does go in.
Amazing. I mean, I'd be there as well. Maybe we can get a little cabaret review together.
I would love something. That. Now, actually, didn't she do Cinderella at some point, Fran Drescher?
She did do Cinderella. I'm a huge Fran Drescher fan. And I think, I think we can call it stunt casting. She was in it with Carly Rae Jepsen as Cinderella, which I think we can also call that stunt casting.
Stunt casting.
Especially when Fran Drescher has to sing, we're going to call that stunt casting. She does do a fabulous singing. Speaking of Rex Harrison, in the the Lincoln Center with the Philharmonic when they do Camelot, she does.
Oh yes,
Morgan Le Fay. It's fabulous. It's probably still stunt casting.
Yes, she's a very talented actress, though, but it is stunt casting.
So do you have stars who come to mind, if not shows, who you just think, we got to get them up on stage. We got to see them in something, in a stunt cast way.
Oh, my gosh. What a great question. You're going to think I'm so bizarre. I always wanted to see a Guys and Dolls with Donald and Melania Trump as Nathan and Adelaide, Barack and Michelle as Sky and Sarah.
Well, not only did you have the names, you had the roles ready. I'm thrilled for that. That was going to be
absolutely
that was question. What roles are we putting them in?
That's always one that I thought I would be like, oh, that would be kind of interesting to see.
Interesting to say the least. Interesting to say the least. Very least.
I would love to see that. That's actually a fantastic question. And I'm trying to think, you know, there's so many people that you look at in all areas of the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because that's the thing that Grease opened up. It said, you don't have to be a theater performer. You know, you can look at a football player and somebody like, you know, Peyton Manning, who's very charming, and go, oh, what could he do? But we didn't have that. But I don't think we had that before Grease. And if you did have it, you had it in stock. You had it in regional theaters. Right. You know, if you're a fan of the Golden Girls, you know, they always make a joke about going to the Burt Reynolds Dinner Theater because they're going to see Miss Ruth Buzzy and Evita. Uh-huh. And we laugh at it. But in some ways, it's not that far off from what was happening. But the fact of the matter was, you thought to yourself, well, a major television star who's really not right for the role, they can do that in summer stock because the quote unquote regional audiences don't know any better, which is a very condescending way of looking at theater goers, I think.
Right.
But then I don't think anyone ever imagined that would be happening in New York, but that is happening in New York. And it's been happening. It started with Grease and now it's continuing to go forward today.
And I think we, as people who enjoy theater, who are fans of theater, who will pay money to go and see a show, I'm definitely interested in seeing something if I recognize a name, you know, if it's something.
Absolutely.
Even if it's not a theater performer.
No, listen, you know, think about it like this. You know, if you're not a religious or devout theater goer, you know, you're coming into New York City, you're going on vacation, right? And you know, there's a couple of things that you need to do when you hit New York City. I'm going to see the Empire State Building. I'm going to get a slice of pizza. I'm going to go see a Broadway show. Mm-hmm. Maybe Wicked has come through your hometown. Maybe you've seen Phantom of the Opera already. So what then is going to get you into a theater? Oh my gosh, I love the Jerry Springer show. He's in Chicago right now. I love the Real Housewives of whatever city we're in right now. I want to go see them do something. I love Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. What is Carson? You know what I mean? So that is also a really important thing. And you're absolutely right, Andrew. As much as we love Broadway performers and we want, you know, you and I might go, oh my gosh, you know, Beth Levels in this show, I have to go see it. Most of the country doesn't know who she is.
Right.
And most of the country, when they come into town, are not buying a ticket because she's in a show. And that's not a knock on a woman who is a brilliant performer.
Do you think we, as theater consumers, as theater makers, is that something we should be concerned about engaging with?
Engaging with, you know, audiences who might not be familiar with the New York theater scene?
Yes, absolutely. Should we be concerned that there are people across the country who don't know who Beth Level is?
I don't think so, because I know that there's lots of people from other industries that we don't know who they are, you know, when it comes to movies, when it comes to television, when it comes to sports. So no, but my feeling is that if you want to keep your show running and you feel like artistically you have done everything possible to keep it running, then I think if you want to, I don't want to say resort to stunt casting, but if you want to explore other options, then I think that you can.
Okay.
But I don't think it's your job as a theater maker from the get-go to start off going, who can we get in this show that'll sell tickets in a risky manner.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
So let's talk about another radically different casting, later revival of Grease. I believe that Andrew Lloyd Webber had already done
one of his shows
where you vote and the winner gets to take on the role on the West End. But I think that, or was the Legally Blonde one first in America, or was You're the One That I Want first in America? I'm not quite sure.
I think Legally Blonde was first.
They did the search for Elle Woods, right?
Yeah, and then I think it was Grease. I might be wrong on that. But
do you
around
think
the same time?
All those shows, because, and then Andrew Lloyd Webber, he kept doing them. He did like 27 of them for all of his shows. Do you think that this 1994 revival of Grease, did that make space for, allowance for this sort of competition show where we're voting for Danny and Sandy?
Absolutely. Because, you know, when reality television really first came out at a popular height, which was in the early 2000s, then, I mean, there were some reality shows before that, but really from 2000 to 2005 is when reality shows really took off. I think the theater industry really wanted to jump on that bandwagon, but I'm sure there was a sense of, this feels immoral or this does not feel right artistically to tap into that reality market. But then they all said, well, Grease did it 10 years ago, so why shouldn't we be doing it now? So yeah, I think had Grease not paved the way with that, I think it would have taken a much longer time for theater practitioners to say, let's lean into the search for Elle Woods. Let's lean into You're the One That I Want, where the audience gets to pick who gets to play Danny and Sandy. And then those two people are given contracts. And I think those two actors, what, Max Crumb and Laura Osnes, I think won.
Yes.
On the show,
oh,
right?
Yes. If you're checking with me, yes. And did I stay up late voting for them? Not to get too political. Yes, I did. I sat up
okay,
and I voted as many times as I could. And let me tell you, I got a little frustrated because a couple years later, we're seeing Laura Osnes do every ingenue role. And I wanted to call someone back and say, listen, I was voting for her to be Sandy, not to take over for every ingenue role ever that you, every single revival. Are you kidding me?
But
I do,
you know,
love
it's,
Max Crumb, though.
Oh, who doesn't? But you know what's interesting? You from Massachusetts, right? Voting for her, you now feel a sense of, I got this person a step ahead.
Oh, absolutely.
Which means then you go root for her. So you might have watched her on television in the competition and go, oh my God, I really like this person. I voted for her for Grease. Then you'll go see Grease. And then the next time she's in a show, you go, oh my God, I voted for her. You take a certain pride in that. The same way that we do when we watch a reality television show and we pick our own people that we want to root for.
I can still go back. I'm still filled with pride. In the Andrew Lloyd Webber episode, she comes out with a gold cape on and she sings Jesus Christ Superstar. And one of Sir Andrew Lloyd's critiques is he didn't know ever that a woman was going to be able to sing this song and be so powerful with it for him. I still brim with pride, even though, you know, I'm a little dicey on her nowadays. But, you know, back then I was like, that's our Sandy, that she's going to win.
Yes. And that's, you know, and that's the point. We as consumers of culture, whether it's music, sports, because I will put sports into that category, mm-hmm. reality television, whether you like it or not, as part of the cultural zeitgeist, we pick favorites. And mm-hmm. so when our favorites ascend from that genre that we're associating them with, mm-hmm. that's exciting for a lot of us. So of course we want to go see Countess Luann in a show. Of course we want to see Mimi Lakes.
Yeah, you did.
Of course we want to go see her in a show.
Of course we want to see her. Yeah.
No, I mean, if you're really following these people's career, mm-hmm. then of course you want to go. There was the great football player Joe Namath, who spent a lot of years doing summer stock, and people did not give a shit what show he was in. They just wanted to see Joe Namath.
Well, I think it's amazing to see like brochures, old programs from summer stock shows, to see some of these names.
I mean, to be honest with you, if this book expanded itself beyond the Broadway industry, mm-hmm. I would have definitely included the Kenley Players in Ohio, which was one of the most prolific theater companies in the United States. Was run by this man, was led a very fascinating life. His name was John Kenley. Do you know his story?
I do not know this story, and I love summer stock, so I want to hear this story.
Great. You can keep this or cut this out if you want. John Kenley owned two theaters in Ohio, and what he would do is in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, he would get the biggest stars imaginable to do a season of shows for him. And I mean like big television and movie stars. He would pay them a ton of money to cut, like Jimmy Stewart and Lauren Bacall and Gloria Swanson. Wow. And he would get them all to come do shows for him. And people would come out from all over Ohio where he was performing these shows to come see these stars. Now, they did not care what show they were in. They just wanted to see the star perform. Now, I digress, but you can cut this out if you want. The interesting thing about John Kenley was he would come up for 3 months in Ohio and live his life as John Kenley. Then he would go to Florida, where he lived his life for the other 9 months of the year as a woman.
Wow.
He switched gender identification depending on what location he was in.
Wow. We have to keep that in. That's so cool.
And he lived to be 104 years old. He was one of the most influential theater producers in the United States because he was the one who really revolutionized and created the idea of putting celebrities into productions to garner ticket sales. And people have tried for years to make documentaries about him, to make a musical about his life. And his family is so embarrassed by his lifestyle. They have denied the rights consistently to his life story.
Wow.
But a very, very fascinating man. But he is to be honest with you, the Weislers might have gotten this idea for stunt casting from the John Kenley model, which was, we'll do six shows and each show will have a different celebrity in it. And when we say celebrity, it ranged. It ranged from athletes to popular singers of the time, maybe a politician here and there that wants to try their hand at acting. But that was a very successful model for him. And all the Weislers did was take that model, apply it to Broadway. And then other Broadway producers saw how successful the Weislers were with Grease and expanded beyond that.
Well,
another great example, I'm sorry, of stunt casting, I would say, is another Weisler thing, which was Reba McEntire and Annie Get Your Gun. Prior to Annie Get Your Gun, Reba McEntire was just known as a country western singer. That's all she was really known for. Nobody knew if she could act. And then she ended up giving one of the most brilliant musical theater performances ever when she took over for Bernadette Peters and Annie Get Your Gun.
Which, have you ever seen Barbara Cook talking about that?
Yes, Barbara Cook said, it was one of the greatest performances that she had ever seen. And if you have never gotten the chance to see Reba McEntire do it, it is brilliant. That's a great example, though, of stunt casting.
And I think it's key that, at least in the talk that I saw, her name just left me. We were just talking about her. Barbara
Cook?
Barbara Cook. Her name just went out of my mind. And I said, I can't just call her Barbara because that's Streisand.
You're just like the whole industry in the 60s and 70s. The name just went out of everyone's heads.
Yeah. But when I saw Barbara Cook talking about it, it was key to me. It hits on exactly what you were talking about, that she was furious when she saw that casting announcement. And it wasn't until she saw the show that she said, oh, no, this lady, she's got it. She's nailing the role. She's a performer.
So, you know, like I said, you know, sometimes it pays off. You know, somebody like Reba McEntire, somebody like Brooke Shields, somebody like Sarah Bareilles, it pays off. And then, you know, there are the unfortunate situations where it doesn't pay off. And not only is the performer, the stunt performer, embarrassed, but the integrity of the show suffers. And, you know, I was not there. I've not seen her performance, so I can't say anything. But I've heard, you know, Linda Blair's performance in Greece, you know, was a moment where everyone felt that the show was cheapened because she wasn't necessarily a performer per se. And they decided to put a they put her face on a billboard in Times Square, but the head rotated because that, you know, from The Exorcist, that was her big thing. And I think at that point, that's when people started to go, there has to be some sort of, I don't want to say a litmus test, but there has to be some sort of standard. And if you're a fan of Last 5 Years, you know, when Kathy is auditioning and we go inside of her inner monologue, she goes, you know, these are the people who put Linda Blair in a musical. And it's a, it, you know, it's a dig at the Weislers casting somebody like Linda Blair, who evoked nostalgia, though.
Right.
Who evoked nostalgia.
Interesting story about Linda Blair. I was once, I needed to use the bathroom in a vet's office. And when I went in there, there were 4 autographed pictures of Linda Blair with her dog. Like, thank you, doctors, blah, 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 blah. Like, she was thanking the vets in this office, but multiple times. And they hung them in the bathroom that they let the patrons use.
I am human, so patrons. Yeah. Fascinated by that.
I hope we can now keep that in too.
I didn't realize there was stunt veterinary casting.
There is. There's stunt veterinary bathroom decoration. It's a whole thing you can major in very select colleges.
Wow, I got to write a sequel to this book then.
In the same 50 key veterinarians' bathrooms that you can use.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I think people would really, really enjoy that. I think people would really enjoy that. I mean, because you're much younger and you probably have your finger on the pulse more than I do. Are there people that you see in the industry, entertainment, sports, TikTok? I mean, we even see people now from TikTok going in to see, and it also, that doesn't necessarily bother me per se.
No,
like if someone is talented and they have a platform to shine, I don't think they should be punished because they didn't get a BFA somewhere.
Right.
But so my question for you is there anybody that you see and you think, oh my gosh, why haven't they done a show yet?
That is a great question. I do wonder with you know, we talked about NeNe Leakes, someone in that same vein of being this person who is this huge personality on a reality show, like builds an empire around their just identity. I wonder, like, when are we going to see Tiffany Pollard on Broadway? I think that she's generated so much cultural capital. She's so iconic in her reactions to things, her responses to things, just simple images of her sitting still circulate on the internet. When are we going to put her on stage, you know? So I'm a big fan of hers. And then there are so many people on TikTok who, it would be absurd, but it would be exciting. And I think a revival is kind of a place to do that. You know, it's not a new show. There's not so much artistically at stake. You know, if you are putting Grease on stage, if it totally tanks and fails and you've got Linda Blair and all these other people not pulling their weight, wait a few decades, someone else is going to put Grease back on stage. They might even have a TV show about it, you know? So I think it would be fun to put, no names coming to mind exactly. Well, I guess one, I love Angel Mommy on TikTok. Would love to put her in, I Love Bells Are Ringing. I'd love to see her do that role. Who knows if she can sing?
Angel Mommy?
Angel Mommy. Yeah.
I am unfamiliar with the work of Angel with Mommy. Her work, are they a TikTok with, star?
She is a TikTok star. Okay. She's very absurd. One might call it comedy. Some might call it transcending any art form. I'd love to see her in a musical comedy. I think it'd be incredible.
I love that. I okay, great. I'm down.
Ready for her Gypsy. Let's be real. I'm ready to see her do Mama Rose. Just a couple of years. She just needs to age into it.
I love you because you just want to jump deep into that pool. No waiting, no shallow end. We're just going to go deep into that pool.
Let's go for it.
for these particular stars. I mean, listen, I understand where people get angry and they go, listen, this is, you know, they're not a real quote unquote performer. Mm-hmm. But I'm also like, well, what does that mean? Mm. Like who gives off the seal of approval of who's a performer and who's not a performer?
Right.
You know, Jerry Springer, he's not a performer. He's up there saying lines. By definition, he's now a performer.
Right. He had to join the union. So
now I don't even want to get started on that.
Okay.
But I really think that this revolutionized things. And, you know, there's a difference between star casting and stunt casting. Mm-hmm. And I think up until Grease, we did have star casting, which is Huel Brenner is a star. He will be the king in The King and I. Mm. Anthony Quinn is a star. He will be Zorba in Zorba.
Right.
But then the stunt casting of unknown entities.
Mm. And I think the chapter in the book does a really great job of laying out, sort of quantifying what is stunt casting.
Yeah. Mark Madama, who wrote our chapter, I think did a really nice job on, like you said, laying all of that information out. But, you know, it was interesting. I was talking to the casting director of Grease, Stuart Howard, and he was saying it was fascinating because, you know, they started looking at things they had never looked at before, which was, you know, they would go to, you know, they would go to the supermarket and buy People magazine and buy the National Enquirer and circle, you know, who's this? Oh, this could be something. That could be something.
Wow.
You know, it was a whole different world of casting than they had been used to before. And now that's really the way it's going. Because at some point, these shows, you know, Kinky Boots will run so long before they need some sort of rejuvenation. Well, right. What's the rejuvenation? You can't write new songs. You can't do a new show. What is the one department we can rejuvenate? Mm-hmm. Casting.
Which, although Beauty and the Beast, they did add some songs when they brought in some of their stunt casting choices.
Correct. But it's not like they took Broadway actors and gave them new songs. It was, you know what I mean? They couldn't change the text. The one thing that they can control, though, in marketing is putting in these different types of celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
And that had not happened before. I think, you know, we can remember a time when a show would run its course and they would go, well, we've cycled through just about everybody. There's really, there's nothing else we can do. We'll close. Now producers are saying, no. We will get people in through the people we're putting in these shows. That's how we'll stay alive. And you've seen it. You saw it on Waitress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Waitress stayed around because Sarah Bareilles popped in, Al Roker popped in.
We saw that huge controversy around The Great Comet with the casting.
Oh, yeah. Now that's interesting because it's for those of us who remember, you know, the idea was that Josh Groban, right?
Right.
Was Dave Malloy, the writer, played the role off Broadway. They realized they needed a star to do it on Broadway. And that's when Josh Groban came in. In some ways, it's stunt casting because you only know Josh Groban as a singer.
Right.
You know, he's not an actor. We didn't know him as an actor. We didn't know him as a performer. And then surprise, surprise, he ended up being quite wonderful in the role. Then he left and they wanted to put in Mandy Patinkin, but really isn't stunt casting because he's a very established Broadway actor. If that's what you're referring to.
Yeah. And I know there was a big blowback against Mandy Patinkin replacing a Black actor in the show. And sort of the official response was, if we don't put Mandy Patinkin in this show, we're closing. And that is what happened because Mandy Patinkin publicly stepped away from the role amidst sort of blowback and the show did close. I don't have enough an opinion on that to sort of quantify it as good, quantify it as bad, but it is, it was very interesting. It was something that happened.
Yeah, that was a show that that the producers knew very clearly, we will not succeed unless there is a name that is drawing ticket buyers to come see this show.
Which is crazy, because if we're talking about a 94 revival sort of starting this mentality, for it to become so commonplace, so standard, for them, the producers, to just be able to say, we do this or we fold, no questions asked, and then their prediction comes true, is kind of crazy.
Listen, we are in a time now, because of finances, that people do not want to take risks on unknown quantities. And that's why it's very hard to get shows up on its feet on Broadway without a celebrity or a name being attached to it, because people, no one is going to pay $200 to go see something called Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812. Like, what is this?
Right.
What was War and Peace musicalized? Is that what it was?
It's one of those.
Or Anna Karenina. I can't. Oh God, I sound so horrible. Oh,
I forget which one it was. It might be War.
I think
and
it's
Peace.
War and Peace.
It might be a different one. I forget. We shouldn't have talked about this. Oh no.
I'm sorry.
No, I think someone's yelling. I think you're right.
Someone's yelling at us. But the issue is they knew. Listen, no one's going to come see this unless there's something that that attracts them to the piece. And then we'll put Josh Groban in. Okay, well, we can't. So Josh Groban's leaving. Who are we going to put in? Well, we'll put in Mandy Patinkin, someone who's an established Broadway actor who hasn't been on Broadway in a while, that has a huge following. Plus, he's also in one of the greatest cult movies of all time, The Princess Bride. It checks all the boxes for producers.
I really did think you were going to say he's in one of the greatest cult movies of all time, Elmo and Grouchland. He's the bad guy.
Well, that goes without saying. Blanky,
but okay.
For me, it's always Elmo and Grouchland, then Citizen Kane, you know, in the list of the top films.
I think that's pretty standard.
But you're absolutely right, though, that the fact that the producers knew, but that's because people don't want to spend money on something they don't know. And that also includes people.
Right.
You know what I mean? That people are known quantities, but you can make money off of people.
Absolutely. Which, I mean, goes back to day one, you know, you can get a refund if a stand-in is going on, you know, or, you know, if you get notified that there's an understudy, you know, they're...
Because you're not coming to see the show, you're coming to see the person.
Right. Right.
And I understand that on a one-man show or one-person show, if they're like, hey, listen, you know, okay, I get, if it's an evening with Harry Connick Jr. and Harry Connick's not there, I kind of understand why people want their money back. Uh-huh. But you're supposed to be going for the story. But a lot of people don't want to go for the story. A lot of people want to go because they go, oh, I love Josh Groban. I want to see him.
Well, I guess also says who says we have to go for the story, you know?
No, well, apparently not anymore.
Not anymore.
but what I always find so fascinating, though, is that the shows that are very successful in the past few years didn't really have names in them. Hamilton didn't have any, there were no names in it.
Right.
All that Manuel Miranda had done was he did a show called In the Heights, and that was it. He wasn't, you know what I mean? Not to say that he wasn't a genius, but nobody knew who he was outside of the New York theater community. There was another one I was just thinking of. Nobody knew who Ben Platt was.
Right.
Before Dear Evan Hansen.
Right.
You know, it's these six. No one knows who. Nobody knew who any of these people were in Six.
Right.
And then these are the shows that end up being the most successful.
That is interesting.
Which I always find fascinating. Fun Home. Same thing.
Right.
Nobody knew who, you know, outside of the end, you know what I mean?
No, of course. Yeah, there are always going to be people who know who, yeah, but outside of the industry, you know, they're not shows, big pull names for tourists.
Yes, and these shows end up being so fascinating and so interesting that they can get people in there. So I think if a producer automatically goes, who's going to sell our tickets for us? Mm-hmm. I think you probably have some bigger issues, because I think that means there's something not working with the story. You don't trust the story enough to let it rest on its own. That's okay. that's, you know what I mean? That's okay. But, and I think Grease is really the show that proved that. I think Grease was the one that said, listen, you, if you keep a revolving door of celebrities in and you keep surprising us with who these celebrities are that are taking over, you know, then I think you're in good shape. So they created this great model. They created this fantastic model. I'm only talking from a financial perspective. I'm not talking from an artistic perspective.
Right, which I think sets us apart from a lot of the other chapters in this book, which are breaking artistic ground, which are paving new paths that shows mimic or recreate artistically, whereas this one sounds like is kind of a different key in a different way.
It is key in a different way because, like we had said at the beginning of the conversation, it cuts out a lot of trained actors who are brilliant performers, but it also puts a lot of butts in seats that probably would not have been there in the first place had that individual not been cast.
For the second part of today's episode, we sit down with Stuart Howard, who was the original casting director for the 1994 revival of Grease, and who was in charge of making sure that the Weislers' request for stunt casting was fulfilled. Here's our interview with Stuart. Stuart, I am so happy that you are joining us today.
My pleasure.
Now, one of the things that the chapter talks about is there are two terms, star casting and stunt casting. Can you tell us, one, if you agree that that is that they should be divided into two terms, and what do you think the differences are between the two?
Well, I have a feeling that people would say in a negative way that Grease was filled with stunt casting. It seems to me, yes, if a stunt is what kept that show running for 4 years. 4 years for revival is quite wonderful.
And a revival, anyone could have gone to the local video store pretty much and, you know, taken the movie off the shelf. So the fact that they're investing so much time. So do you feel that the term stunt casting is an appropriate term, or do you look at it just as it's casting?
You know, I think I would say it's casting. I would never give it the name stunt casting because it either fulfilled what we needed or it didn't.
And the idea of saying, of really thinking outside the box of Greg Louganis. I mean, that's very outside the box because he had never been on Broadway. I know Cousin Brucey, the DJ, had come in, but also out of the box because they're not quote unquote Broadway actors. Where did those ideas come from?
Everyone.
Everyone had an idea.
Barry had the only show, I think I worked on about 8 shows with the Weislers. I don't remember him specifically coming to meetings for casting. But he had a lot of ideas once the show started. Once we realized Marcia Lewis, who was the original Miss Lynch.
Who's the principal character in the show, right?
She, once she left, it opened up a lot of older women who were looking for jobs.
Interesting. Now, Marcia Lewis was a very respected Broadway actress, but a Broadway actress.
Yes.
So did you ever consider, once she left, who's a Marcia Lewis type in the theater industry? Or did it immediately go to who else outside of the box could fit into that slot? If that makes sense, that question.
It totally makes sense. I think it was both of those things.
Yeah.
I mean, Mimi...
Hines.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. Mimi Hines, who was one of the replacements for Barbara Streisand. she wanted to do this show. Another person who really wanted to do it was Sally Struthers, who now, it's not like it was the only show she ever did.
Yes.
She works every summer at the Ogunquit Playhouse.
She's now a very respected musical comedy.
Totally.
Actress.
And a lovely, funny woman.
How did this, well, there's a couple of layers to all of this. I mean, unlike something like Chicago, where I don't want to say there's any nostalgia element to it. Grease is a nostalgia show, right?
Yeah.
The idea is the audience comes in and is harkened back to things of their past.
Right.
And so a lot of the casting did that as well, putting in somebody like Mackenzie Phillips or Linda Blair, people that had been popular 20 years ago. How did your casting process change knowing that you had to think outside the box? Did you start looking at magazines you never thought you were going to look at?
Not just magazines, but people in my office had recordings. I mean, that's how Debbie Boone.
Mm.
And I said, but she can really, really sing. And, but she did play Rizzo.
Yes.
Which in our production was...
Which Rosie O'Donnell was the first Rizzo in the revival.
Definitely auditioned. And I didn't know who she was really. I mean, I knew she was a comedian.
Yes.
I think I had heard her sing, but not really sing. And they knew they wanted her the minute she started joking. And there were other people who definitely auditioned.
Like we had said in the beginning of this podcast, you know, it's not really stunt casting. It's thinking outside the box in order to keep a production running so tons of people can stay employed. Did you ever feel as a casting director from any of your fellow peers in CSA or anyone else in the casting world going, oh, you're doing, are you the guy who brought...
All the time.
And how do you respond to that? How does that make you feel?
I guess probably I said things like crying all the way to the back.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us. Please make sure to purchase a copy of 50 Key Stage Musicals by visiting routledge.com or by clicking in today's show description. If you want to learn more about Grease, please also review the links in the below description. I'm Andrew Child, and thank you for listening to 50 Key Stage Musicals, the podcast.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.